Welcome to Points on the Board, where we dive deep into the world of sports, exploring not just the game, but the stories that unfold off the field, in the boardrooms, and even in the corridors of power. This week, we've got a lineup that's as diverse as all the sports we love. We'll kick off with a lighthearted look at Super Bowl 59's commercials, because who doesn't like a good ad? Spoiler alert, there weren't that many good ones. Then we'll tackle the news. Some consider it big news. President Trump's executive order on transgender athletes and its ripple effect through the NCAA and the Department of Education. After that, we'll compare two high-profile controversies involving NFL stars Justin Tucker and its relationship to Deshaun Watson, something I think should be called Masseuse Gate. Then we'll celebrate the legends with a look at the 2025 Pro Football Hall of Fame class, while not shying away from the debates that come with some of these individuals and the honors. To be frank, we're actually going to talk more about those that didn't get in. Then we'll close it out with sports stories around the nation. So strap on your leather helmets, because Points on the Board is where sports, politics, and culture collide. Hello, everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and thank you for tuning in to Sports on the Board. Before I forget, let me remind you, the audience, you can find this podcast at grumblingsmedia.com, and you're likely checking it out at one of our social media outlets or YouTube and Rumble. We also can be found at Apple, Spotify, and Pandora under the handle Grumblings Media. Well, let's get right into it, my friends. Let us talk about some commercials and the Super Bowl. First of all, I loved how the Super Bowl turned out. It turned out pretty dandy, if I may say so. I'm in the camp that I'm tired of the Chiefs getting all the breaks from the refs. In fact, I looked at their injury report after the game, and it had inactive NFL refs in the Chiefs injury report. But it was a shellacking. So that left people wondering, what about the commercials? Let me check out the commercials. So let's get down to that and check those out. This is my top 10. Now, just because they're my top 10, I'm going based off me liking them, but also on the quality of what they were trying to showcase. First up is Harrison Ford for Jeep. Very American-esque, but here's a problem when an actor that we know his politics and it comes through loud and clear does something exactly the opposite of who he is. It taints whatever they work on when we know they don't believe what they're spewing. Harrison Ford is a hardcore leftist. I mean, nobody can doubt that. He's a very extreme hardcore leftist, and he doesn't believe in anything he was talking about in the commercial. He's talking about freedom, when we all know the party he supports doesn't want a free America. And then he talks about heroes, when the party he supports is an ideology who is okay with seeing we veterans dead on the streets. It hurts the overall theme of the commercial. We live in a new era where the media will collide with the personality, and not always in a good way, with a segment of society that knows what is happening. And that segment of society that blurs the lines between the personality's ideology and the commercial, that will grow. They will see the reality of the facade. And while the commercial was great, the bum excuse of an actor who we all love as an actor diminished it. It was just a bad commercial from that perspective. Now, the next one that was well done was the Pfizer knockout. You know, this was a tug at your heart commercial in beating cancer. But we can't forget what Big Pharma did to us during COVID. The fact they tug at our hearts but have killed millions worldwide with their vaccines. Kind of gives response as to why they did this commercial. They had to tug at our hearts to appear to care. And we're all for beating cancer. We all love the commercial. And not all vaccines are bad. The majority of them are good. But since the late 80s, when they changed the law, we went from less than 10 vaccines being given to us that we're at 70 plus and counting. The next one up, well, you know, this one is some of the guys will get it. This one here is Kevin Burkhardt and Tom Brady for Duracell. I don't think that's Kevin Burkhardt there. I mean, we all know Tom Brady is one of the analysts. And the other guy, who I assume is Kevin Burkhardt, but this is a picture of the Duracell guy. And there was only one line in this commercial that made it funny, that put it at the number 8 in my countdown. In fact, the Harrison Ford was number 10. The Pfizer was number 9. Kevin Burkhardt and Tom Brady's number 8. And it was a commercial about having batteries replaced. Tom Brady, and they had to put batteries in them. But the line that referenced what is now an infamous roast of Tom Brady saved it. And it made you bust out laughing at the end. All right. Number 7. Here's another one. Shane Gillis, Post Malone, and Peyton Manning. I got to be honest. I don't know who the hell Post Malone is. But it was for Bud Light. The commercial was great. Pure machismo, pure suburban dad. I don't want to say machismo, maybe fake machismo in the sense, you know, suburban people, we're all soft. But it was the machismo of the male and everything we represent. But it was still a failure. Why? Because the whole country is not going to forget how they threw us conservatives overboard, and they have never offered an apology. This corporation, Anheuser-Busch, badmouthed its consumer, said it's time to get the frat boy mentality out of this. Are you kidding me? It's the frat boys that drink your beer. I gave up Bud Light after I left college. Who the hell drinks that nasty, that nasty tasting beer? Bud Light is one of the worst tasting beers out there, but it's got a loyal following. Why? Well, when you're in college, that's about all you can afford. That and Bush. That was my beer in college. Bush. I don't drink beer anymore. If I do, it's a Corona. Heavens, the Betsy. I may not be able to afford that now with Trump's tariffs. Wink, wink. I'll be sarcastic. Anyway, back to this commercial. Again, they badmouth its consumers. And with the Super Bowl commercial, they acted like nothing happened. And, you know, I'm also sick of the overrated Peyton Manning. Yes, he is overrated. He's been in 3 Super Bowls. He had a big hand in winning 1, his Super Bowl win against Rex Grossman. I think it was Rex Grossman. Was it Rex Grossman? I can't remember. Maybe it wasn't. But the Broncos defense won his 2nd one. They carried him because he was actually a detriment to the team at that point in his career. He was out there because of his name. The backup should have been starting. He had outplayed him the last few weeks. And then we can't forget his embarrassing loss to Seattle. It was a debacle. And that loss was so bad. To me, it takes him out of any GOAT conversation that he actually never belonged in. Bud Light, back to the commercial, won't win back many conservatives anytime soon. But I get it. It's branding, and they had to do it. All righty. Let's go to number 6. This one's a classic every year. Number 6, First Delivery, Budweiser. Look, Anheuser-Busch has a thing going with the Clydesdales set in the country, in the cold winter settings, and they always wind up in some kind of civilization, in some small town doing something. And this one, it was about the delivery of a keg, I guess. I didn't even pay attention to the commercial. I just got into the moment of the scenery, the horse. I'm a softie when it comes to animals and God's creations. They're innocent. They do nothing but give unconditional love, including horses. So, you know, it's how Americans respond to animals and horses. They're always great, these commercials. But this one didn't quite tug at my heart like most do. And I think because it gets harder and harder to do these every year. However, it was solid and very American-esque. All right, let's get to the next one. This one here was when I first saw it, I was like, eh. But then when I was reviewing for the show, I checked every commercial out. Channing Tatum and Wrexham AFC for Stoke Cold Beer Brew Coffee. I don't like cold brew coffee, and I'd never heard of Stoke before this. I think I may have, but you know, it doesn't do anything for me. But it was cute with the dancing and timing of the players interacting with the moves of Tatum, showcasing his dance moves.
Hala.
Magic Mike and his personal past. He was a stripper with the Chippendales when he got his start. And he can't dance. So it's always cute to see a full-grown man throwing back to his heyday like that. But it was the final shoot of the players throwing their clothes, going full Monty. That was a cherry on top and put the commercial over the top. So I enjoyed it, and it was cute. Obviously, they just didn't show the guys in full Monty, but the innuendo was there. And, again, you know, check these commercials out. Check these commercials out because the ones that I mentioned, because they are cute or funny, except for the Harrison Ford and the Pfizer. Well done. Well done. And that's why they made the list. But for personal reasons, I think they were trash. Now, this one shocked me. I did not think this one would be funny. Catherine O'Hara and Willem Dafoe for Michelob Ultra. Now, that said, I have to be honest. Catherine O'Hara, that's like a name I've heard, but I don't know who the hell she is. And everyone knows who Willem Dafoe is. Now, I guess they had all kinds of athletes here. I just recognized one. You know, it was Randy Moss. However, this was cute seeing two old farts, one famous, the other one not really, doing a hustle, which is what I assume is pickleball and turned out to be the case. Yes, it's pickleball and taking out the younger crowds. It was reminiscent of a pool hustler. And the commercial included Randy Moss, as I said. And then I semi-recognized the other one, Sabrina Ionescu. And that's only because I was following Caitlin Clark through her first year of the WNBA. Not because I know who Sabrina Ionescu is. I think she helped the Liberty win their first championship here, the WNBA Finals. But, hey, this is WNBA. Listen to me. I knew her face and vaguely knew who she was because of Caitlin Clark. You need to use her as a marketing tool much more. But instead, you will throw her under the bus with her white privilege. But I'm digressing. Now, the rest of them, I had no clue who the hell they were. You know, Ryan Crozier, Olympic gold medalist, Juanme Martinez, Vich. Well, I wouldn't know him. He's a professional pickleball player. Emily Cedarquist, another one, professional pickleball player. I assume maybe those were towards the end. Paris Todd of pickleball, Hunter Josh. So they had the pickleball crowd here. So good for them. Good for them for giving props to the people who have made that semi-nationwide sensation. Yeah. So let's get to the final three, people. We are going to go with, yes, yes, I did not like it at first. See, I wasn't really paying attention to the commercials when they first came on as I was doing other things. But as I did the review, I really got into some of them. And I really liked the Matthew McConaughey, Martha Stewart. I've never heard of this Charlie Zhex, whatever her name is. She's and Greta Gerwig for Uber Eats. So the first three, and I had a few other people. But this one was as creative as you can get, starting from the beginning of football to the present day. Excuse me. So it started from the beginning of football and went to the present day and selling a conspiracy that football was made to sell food. Extremely creative. Everything from bacon and pig skin to well, you watch the commercial. But it had Martha Stewart, Kevin Bacon were the only two I recognize. Sean Evans is the other name I haven't mentioned. But it was very creative and very well done. Let us move on to this one, I loathe Matt Damon. In fact, I got to be honest. Outside the Bourne movies, I can't really remember anything of his that I like. I know I've enjoyed a couple of his movies. But this was David Beckham and Matt Damon for Stella Artois. Or Artois. I don't know how to pronounce it. I don't drink that crap. I apologize to Stella. I haven't tasted your beer, so I don't know if it's crap or not. But y'all had a great commercial. This one was also extremely creative with two David Beckhams. Matt Damon playing David Beckham's abandoned son in the United States. And what made it funny was one of the lines asking, well, how famous are you? Are you Damon famous? No, Affleck famous. You got to see it. It's a very creative commercial despite the fact Damon's so far up the leftist tush, he has a perpetual stink on him. And number one, baby. Number one, my favorite, and it's because it was nostalgic to me. And that is Instacart, we're here. This was one of my favorites. This was my favorite as it got, actually it was one of my two favorites as it got a cast of characters for Old Spice to the Jolly Green Giant to Kool-Aid and others, including Cheetos, the Energizer Bunny, the Heinz Hot Dog, Pillsbury Doughboy, and Mr. Clean in the back there. The Old Spice guy was in there too. It was all good. It was all good. And to me, those are the sadly, the Doughboy, the Energizer Bunny, Kool-Aid, and Jolly Green Giant. Those are, and maybe Cheetos and Mr. Clean. Those are standards, generations they've been around. The others have come and gone in terms of different types of characters. But it was great. It was great. The final line was a cherry on top in regard to milk. When they go at the end, you forgot the milk. Let's see who else. So let's see. Chester Cheetah from Cheetos. Puppy Monkey Baby from Mountain Dew. Never heard of it. The Jolly Green Giant, Mr. Clean, the Pillsbury Doughboy, the Kool-Aid Man, Energizer Bunnies, and the Old Spice Guy. Okay, so I was right. And the tie, the one that was a tie, was... Oops, where'd it go? Where'd it go? Oh, no. Oh, no. Let me grab it here real quick. There it is. I had to find an image for you guys. I've been showing you an image of my top 10. It's the Coors Light Slow Monday. This one was just hilarious with the sloth doing everything so slow and creating chaos. Because I love the slow police chase. It got the message across very clearly in the terms of the Monday blues. However, I didn't get the Coors tie-in with the Monday's blue a beer. That did not make any sense to me, to be quite frank, but it's a great commercial. Great commercial. And there you have it. This year's Super Bowl ads were a blend of creativity, star power, and controversy. From heartwarming to humorous, the commercials left us mixed feelings about the brands and their messages. Mixed feelings because, as I said, the Harrison Ford one, the Bud Light one, and the Pfizer ones, they were really kind of lying to us. We know who they are and what they truly represent. And they're jumping on the, in their defense, their marketing, and going with the where the culture wars have taken us. So kudos to them to do that, but we know who and what they are. Some manage a charm, while others, again, were overshadowed by past actions or political stances, reminding us that in today's climate, every ad is under scrutiny. All right, moving on. Trump's executive order on transgender athletes. NCAA and Department of Education responses. Okay, President Trump's executive order titled Keeping Men Out of Women's Sports. Well, that sparked a significant policy shift, aiming to exclude transgender women from competing in women's sports, or, as I view it, actually correcting the abomination of having men and boys compete against women simply by claiming they are a woman. My proof, Leah Thomas. The man is Will Thomas because he still had to schlong, and he was like, woo, 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 in that locker room. I forget what it's called, but there's a dysphoria where men get off on that. They literally get off. It's a sexual for the average man like me. It's a woman. For him, it's pretending to be a woman. Yeah. So this action is reshaping the landscape for transgender athletes across various levels of competition, from high school to college sports, as we're seeing. While, again, it's bringing back common sense and normalizing sports. And the immediate repercussions are felt through responses from the NCAA and the U.S. Department of Education. And what are those? Well, they're setting a new stage for debate on gender sports and rights. It's going to spark and has sparked legal battles, policy revisions, and actually, my notes say, a natural conversation about fairness, inclusivity, and human rights. No. This is about the rights of women, protecting them. Oh, man, that's what burns me up. This isn't anything for discussion. Protect women. So this order redefines Title IX protections to exclude transgender females from women's sports and mandates that schools must comply or risk losing federal funding. Again, it goes back to what the protection's for. women. And it marks a significant shift from the bastardizing of Title IX to include transgenders, aka boys saying they're girls to play. Now, there was an immediate response to this, and it was great. And we knew this was going to be the immediate response based off of congressional hearings. And then in alignment with the executive directive, the NCAA promptly banned transgender athletes from competing in women's sports. They were looking for an excuse to say you can't do it. They're afraid of all the lawsuits, losing the culture wars, et cetera, et cetera. So this overturned earlier policies that considered hormone therapy and testosterone levels for eligibility. Obviously, this impacts current and prospective transgender athletes. You know what it impacts is that boy in high school who's getting a visit from the university to play a women's volleyball. All of a sudden, that's canceled. Good. Yeah. The NCAA needed a higher power, the government, to help them make the right decision by now being able to fend off litigation as stating it's the law, which it is. So it stipulates, the policy stipulates that only individuals assigned female at birth are eligible to compete in women's sports, which is what we wanted and how it should be. Obviously, they're supporting the opposition. But here's the kicker. This is what shocks me. People are like, that's pretty high, William. That's pretty high. The policy's garnered support from obviously conservative factions, but overall, 70% of all Americans advocate for preserving the fairness of women playing women in sports only. Only 70%? That should be 99.9%. You know, it's funny. All these people supporting it, they send their kids to private schools. They don't play sports, 99.9% of them. So they don't care that it's your daughter that's going to have a kill spike, a kill shot at your daughter. We've seen the ramifications of that already. And supposedly there's backlash from human rights organizations, transgender advocates. You know what? Dylan Mulroney's available. Bud Light fired her tail. She can be the new face.
I'm Dylan Mulroney, and I support men in volleyball. No, I'm sorry. I'm a woman.
Yes, I'm mocking her because it's a him. These people are saying this promotes discrimination and ignores the complexities of gender identity. No, it doesn't. You're either born a man or a woman, with an extremely small percentile born as hermaphrodites, born with the opposite sexual organs or whatever. I apologize in terms of what the proper framing of it is. They're born with sexual inside them. So you can be a male on the outside and a female on the inside, a female parts, you know, the sexual parts. And I actually know somebody that happened to. But that's a very extreme outlier. You know, and obviously this shift, this policy shift is part of a broader pattern by Donald Trump and his administration to roll back transgender rights that they should never have had, including healthcare and military service. You know, there are people who would join the military just to get their transgender. Then they would plead some nut job case or some other case and then get out. And then we would still be paying their medical stuff. No, that needs to stop. Man, that was pathetic. Now, they need to codify this as the actual law. This is an executive order. And I do believe Congress is talking about that. And they need to do that now while it's a Republican Congress. I was going to say conservative Congress, but it's not a conservative Congress. It's a Republican Congress. The conservatives are still outnumbered by rhinos like Mitch McConnell. And for the record, that's going to be a topic on my Fired Up Conservative Talk this week. So stay tuned for that this Friday. There needs to be a freaking term limit. You have McConnell there. You know, here's my invitation, McConnell. Hey, hat. And I'm not making fun of people that happens to, I'm making fun of McConnell. The man has destroyed American lives. He's bought and paid for by China. You go, the data's there to support that. He's just a bad dude. And now he's in his 80s. I think if he's not, then dear God, he's an unhealthy bleep. But the man, he just fell. Now he's in a wheelchair. You know, it's like, come on. Anyway, I digress there. But remember, those who defend boys and men who claim to be women and demand to play against women, it's political. They wouldn't allow their, if it was their kid, they'd think differently. Now, there is an investigation. There is an investigation. The Department of Education has launched investigations into compliance at several institutions, specifically one we've talked about numerous times here on, I'm trying to think, what's on the board, too many podcasts, and that is San Jose State University and the University of Pennsylvania to ensure adherence to the new transgender sports policy. So San Jose State's Blair Fleming case, Department of DOE is probing the situation involving Blair Fleming at San Jose State, and I don't know, that's done and over with. She's gone. But teammates did file a lawsuit claiming they were not informed of the player's birth sex, raising significant concerns after competitive fairness, safety, and obviously privacy in the locker rooms. This dealt, too, with putting Blair Fleming and rooming her with one of her teammates and not telling her teammates Blair was transgender. That's a big no-no. And they tried to cancel that girl. In fact, they tried to take her out, allegedly. Fleming coordinated with Colorado State to take her out with a kill shot. And San Jose State University said they did an in-depth investigation that took less than a week. They would not release anything about their investigation. They just said, nothing to see here. That's why I said I have to say alleged for legality's sakes. But at the end of the day, there was something going on there. And there are witnesses that say they heard what was happening in terms of overheard him and things of that nature. So hopefully that will come out and the truth will come out and sanctions and people getting fired and penalized, maybe even charges brought up if you're trying to take somebody out. I don't know what the law says on that. I do believe, though, that Fleming, I want to be truthful here, full transparency. I do believe Fleming had already transitioned. But that's a big investigation. Then there's also UPenn's Leah Thomas case. Leah Thomas, Will Thomas is actually the name, whose participation and subsequent record-breaking performance in women's events have led to legal action by former teammates. The man was destroying records left and right. I mean, he was like a behemoth towering these women. And again, he had not transitioned. He was a full-fledged guy. You know, I can see the porn movie, you know, being done to mock that. And you see the Will Fleming coming, not Will Fleming, I'm combining them. Will Thomas coming in, you know, the camera shot, woo, 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 going, I bring home the bacon, but you know, something like that. But my point is he was in a locker room of women, naked. They actually had to change, if I'm correct, in a locker room with that, had everybody in there, kids, women, anything, you know. That's how bad these laws have gotten. And there's Leah Thomas, a.k.a. actually Will Thomas, you know, flaunting his dong everywhere. So, like, has some respect. Not him. I think I'm speculating he may have gotten off on that. But anyway, these lawsuits address issues of privacy, equity, and the perceived advantage transgender athletes have. It's not might have, but have. Thomas had not transitioned and was still swinging his schlong in front of the team in the locker room. And these investigations aim to reaffirm Title IX protections for female athletes. Not you, Will Thomas. So the NCAA stance, I said, they're good. They're revising their policies in line with the administrator's directives. It underscores a significant policy shift at the collegiate level. And it will set precedent for other sports organizations and educational institutions. Now, a little bit of pushback on this, and pushback not from me, but from the Minnesota High School. they clash with Trump's transgender sports ban. State law versus federal law. The Minnesota State High School League, that's where the pushback is coming from, has stated, we will uphold our policy to allow men to beat up on women in amateur sports. Why? Because we're not real men, so we got to go beat up on women. They cite the Minnesota Human Rights Act and the state's constitution would explicitly prohibit discrimination based on gender identity. So they're directly challenging the federal executive order. Now, what are the response and implications here? Well, there's a threat of losing federal funding. And because of that, the MSHSL is contemplating seeking legal counsel from everybody's favorite racism bigot, Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison. So there's some nuances I was told that will wind up in court. And the lawyer who I spoke with didn't say right, who's right and who's wrong. He said the government's right, but this is how it'll play out. That he says while the supremacy clause generally favors federal law, states might argue that the educational policy falls under their jurisdiction, especially when the state laws offer greater protection. He's not saying that is correct. He's saying that's one aspect they may argue. And then they can sit there and say, hey, by taking that our money away from us, that's unconstitutional and coercive. I'm like, well, they made us wear seatbelt laws that way. They put driving under the speed limit or making speed limit laws a certain way. They do it all the time. People, you don't forget, I was 18. Yeah, I can have a cold one. They changed the law that week in North Carolina to 21. I had freedom for a week. And you know how they got the states to change the laws? They said, you will not get your highway funding. It was okay then. But that's what they're going to try to set the stage for. And, you know, people want to say, well, we're trying to seek a balance between federal oversight and states' rights. No. They just want to allow men to beat up on women, whether it's a kill shot in volleyball, whether it's boxing like we saw in the Olympics. Yeah, they got boxing in Minnesota. You know, my take is this. Why don't you be the first woman transgender to play football? Because you wouldn't last. You'd actually fit. You're a boy, actually. You know, but there's a reason you don't see women playing against the boys. No, in the hand, they have a kicker does not count, people. Shut the bleep up. So there is an update via Libs and TikTok that I saw right before coming out here. Breaking news. It's not really breaking news. And by the time you see this, it'll be a few days old. But the Trump administration did announce that they're launching an investigation into the Minnesota State High School League for continuing to allow men to invade women's sports. So as we discussed, the executive order by President Trump, followed by NCAA policy adjustments and the Department of Education investigation, marks a pivotal moment in the discourse on transgender athletes, aka men playing in women's sports. This not only challenges the current landscape of woke sports, but also sets the stage for a legal and cultural battle over what constitutes fairness, equality, and inclusion in athletics. With 70% of the country, and I think that's still too low, it should be 99.9%, but with 70% of the country saying, get these so-called women who are not really women out of female sports, I think this battle is lost before it's begun. Supposedly, the outcomes of these policies and investigations will redefine the future sports governance. No. It's just fixing Title IX and the abomination Dementia Joe. And in his defense, he probably didn't know what he was doing. And we know that from Mike Johnson when he started talking about executive orders. He says he didn't sign a certain executive order. Turns out he did. Why? We don't know who was running the country. And the fact that nobody wants to investigate that, this is a side note, is beyond me. It's corrupt. It shows how corrupt our government is. We can't investigate Joe. And the rhinos in there, you're right, we can't. No, you investigate that. We don't want to use it against us. The truth is the truth. You investigate it, and you bring up conspiracy charges, and charges of treason against those who were doing what they weren't elected for. Because Dementia Joe, I mean, the Democrats said it. That's why they kind of bumped him off and brought Kamala on. Regardless, I'm digressing. See, I'm on a rant. Let's move on from this complex journey through policy, law, and human rights in sports to something, well, just as bad. Kicking through controversy, Justin Tucker's massage scandal versus Deshaun Watson's legal battle. Man. There is my man, Justin Tucker. In the world of professional sports, where athletes are often idolized, the line between personal conduct and public perception, well, it can blur dramatically, people. Justin Tucker, the Baltimore Ravens, he's a celebrated kicker until this year when he just went south and missed more than he's ever missed in his career. Well, he now finds himself embroiled in a scandal reminiscent of the very high-profile case of Deshaun Watson that split the sports world in black and white. Well, it was black against white, Asian, Latino, everything else. That's how the battle lines ended up being drawn. When the truth of the matter is, if Justin Tucker has done these things, he needs to be ran out of the league, period. And what am I talking about? Accusations of inappropriate behavior during massage sessions that put his reputation on the line. And this is what I mean. It's echoing the legal and moral quagmire that Watson faced. And my issue with Watson wasn't Watson and the masseuse. It was how the league handled it. We'll get into that in a second. But anyway, this comparison delves into the allegations, the responses, and the stark differences between these two cases. Are there really stark differences? We'll find out. I don't think there are, but I want to be fully transparent in how I look at this from both sides. And we're going to shed light on how sports stars navigate these treacherous waters of public scrutiny in this new world of social media. He's been accused by six, not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, but six. And when that's six, you're like, But then you look at it and go, well, this was session spanning from 2012 to 2016. 9 years ago. So most people think this is a shakedown, whereas Deshaun Watson was very much more recent. It was like an ongoing thing. This is like a point in time. You don't start this and then stop it. If he kept doing this, he was doing this longer than 2016. So, you know, red flag number one. And I'm not siding with Tucker, as I said. I'm like him like I was with Watson. But there's a reason I was much harsher on Watson. And it wasn't directly at Watson as much as the NFL and the Browns and the Texans. Anyway, they include the accusations include Leah Thomas acts of exposing his genitals, brushing against the therapist. Oops, didn't mean to put my schlong on your thigh. Brushing against therapists with his exposed penis and leaving what was supposed to believe to be semen on massage tables in at least three instances. You know, if you ain't got the semen, you must have quit. Anyway, these details were, or allegations were detailed in an investigation by the Baltimore Banner, leading to an official NFL review of the matter. So Tucker has vehemently denied the allegations, as Deshaun did. Deshaun had over 30. Yeah, I was like, holy mackerel. You know, but there's only six so far. If it's true, more could come out. The problem is that he says, she said, I think you're going to see Tucker, if he's truly innocent, and this is what I said Deshaun should have done, should have sued the hell out of him. You don't have any proof. You're besmirching my name. Give me the proof, or I'm going to sue you for defamation. Slander. He stated in a public response, Tucker did, that he has never been accused of such misconduct, or as the feminists would say, misogyny, before or during any massage therapy sessions. Six masseuses, well, in over 4 or 5 years. You know, I'm like that. I'll go from one to another trying to find one that I like. I love those deep tissue massages, and I need Helga. I haven't found Helga. In fact, overseas, I got massages by men. Just they're stronger. They get it deep, you know? These women. Anyway, he described the accusations as unequivocally false and accused of publication of misconstruing events to generate clicks. That could be true. I've never heard of the Baltimore Banner. But we don't know. Tucker's legal team has also dismissed the claims as impossible to prove, which is true. That means it's a he said, she said. So if I'm Tucker, my lawyer's bringing suits to every one of these individuals, including the paper. Both NFL and Baltimore Ravens have acknowledged the allegations. And as I stated, the NFL is going to investigate while the Ravens express that they will take such allegations seriously and would monitor the situation. Here's part of the problem for these women. The Me Too movement, it's not dead. It will always be there because there is legit issues. But you can't believe women without the evidence now. That's what's starting to go back to normalcy. You know, if somebody's raped somebody, somebody sexually assaulted somebody, every American, every decent human being wants that to get resolved, wants the perpetrator to be punished. The problem is Me Too movement became political. And it was used against them. Hey, you know, remember Al Franken? And he's like, this much distance between the breasts of the woman? Because it was just a comedy, a joke. He was forced to resign. He got thrown under the bus. He should never have resigned. But I was on the bandwagon resign. Why? Because that's the standards you hold conservatives to. So what's good for the goose is good for the gander. So he deserved to resign. But in the political world, anywhere else, no, he should have stood his ground. My issue with the NFL and the Texans and Browns is they did nothing to Watson and any took no action against him. They didn't even really investigate until they were pressured to, until it became, there's 20 of them, we got to do something. And even the district attorney did not want to press charges. It is true. You can, if you want to take somebody to court, you can, what's it saying, convict a ham sandwich, you know, or find a ham sandwich guilty at a grand jury. So everything was in play for him to move. And $230 million? No. You don't give that guaranteed contract to somebody who's not proven himself. And then all this happened, they kept moving forward with the contract. They thought this guy was going to take him to the promised land. How? I don't know when you look at the fact he couldn't take the Texans to the promised land and kept getting hurt. They were a better team at times when he was there. Any action against Tucker will likely move into a legal issue from Tucker's representative, is my belief will happen, because there's no proof it's a he says, she said, and we've seen how that has played out. And let's be honest here. The NFL created precedent when they did nothing to Watson until they felt forced because of public pressure. And then it was merely a slap on the wrist to Watson, meaning he got suspended 11 games and got his payday. He has played less games than he has played games for the Browns. Let me double check that, but I think that's true. Hold on one second, my friends. Okay, I looked it up. Deshaun Watson is 9-10 in his games with the Browns. So he's played in 19 games over 3 seasons. Oh, my God. There are 51 games. Holy MAGA. What's that? 31 games he's missed. It's like, oh, my God. How bad can you get? Anyway, this isn't about Watson. It's about Tucker. So there are similarities here. The nature of the accusations, both Tucker and Watson were accused of inappropriate sexual conduct during massage therapy sessions. In Watson's case, over 24 women, I think it was up to 30-something now, accused him of sexual assault and harassment, with many specifics echoing the allegations that are against Tucker. And this included exposure and unwanted physical contact. You know, the NFLPA stuck up for Watson, so did the NFL, so did their teams. Tucker right now, it's still fairly new. It's still in the investigation. But both cases, Watson is still receiving media coverage about it because he's been so bad. And Tucker has to play out still. And don't forget, though, Watson has a guaranteed $230 million contract. So what are some of the differences? Well, I guess the scale and publicity. You know, Tucker at the end of the day is just a place kicker. Watson's a quarterback, you know, and Watson's case has already involved numerous lawsuits, settlements, etc. It's just been around much longer. The fan reactions have been mixed, but predominantly lean towards skepticism of the women regarding Tucker's accusation. This is where the tribalism comes in. But then again, you had over a couple dozen, and then eventually over 30. You had a whole cover-up by the league early on. The embarrassment that was the district attorney, the embarrassment that the Browns didn't do their due diligence. So there's so many angles that made Watson's look so much worse. Was it? No. One sexually assaulted woman is as bad as 30 sexually assaulted women, or in this case, 6 to 30. So my take is was more the what the Browns are doing, guaranteed contract audits and all this going down, and then there's just every, all the underlying, the drama, the storylines with Watson is what I found disgusting. At the end of the day, throw them both out of the league if they're guilty. But it's going to be tough finding guilt in any of these. And Watson's already cleared the hurdle. And because Watson has cleared the hurdle, this is he says, she said, I suspect Justin will too, especially if he sues back. And if they don't hire, if they let Justin go, I think he has a big lawsuit potential against the NFL. So on social media, fans have made comments ranging that are supportive, like Justin Tucker has been a class act. I find this hard to believe. Too sarcastic humor, drawing comparisons with Watson, such as Deshaun Watson and Justin Tucker, the day they get banned from their massage parlor. There's fans who are critical, questioning some of the accusations. You know, how could such accusations come to light after years? If it's true, it's a disgrace to the sport and the Ravens. Not really. The Ravens are innocent in this. You know, this is something that nobody knows about. You can get this on the down low if you're the player doing it. I mean, and obviously, if it is true, he kept it on the down low for 9 years. Well, 8 years. We just entered 2025. Anyway, the cases of Justin Tucker and Deshaun Watson, while sharing a grim similarity in the nature of the accusations, they do diverge significantly in their scale, legal consequences, and public reaction. Legal consequences and public reaction. Right now, it's a wait and see with Tucker's. Pretty much, I think, the only difference. But we will see how this turns out and how this conversation moves forward. Whether Tucker's career will rebound like Watson's, meaning he still has an NFL career, or if this is a defining moment and he's out of the league, well, that remains to be seen. But my bottom line to you, young athletes, good-looking athletes, you've got to keep your head on the swivel when you're young, rich, and famous because you don't know who wants the cha-ching bank from your account. It also shows how we become tribalistic, Tucker being white, Watson being black. And I didn't get into that too much, but that's become a big issue on social media too. You know, my take is, look, man, we've wiped out racism to single-digit percentages. It's not really there. Why, after 15 years of race hoaxes, over 400 that we have documented, media-generated hate, and that hate's still going because politicians, hey, hate is a strong emotion. And homophily shows that we tend to congregate amongst our own cultures. And Democrats know this, so they play the race card. This could get worse before it gets better. Let's hope not. All right, my friends, let us move on to – let me clean this up here. I'm cleaning up my thing here. All right, getting all these images here out. We're going to talk 2025 Pro Football Hall of Fame class. And it was actually a very small class this year. There we have Eric Allen on the far left, Jared Allen in the second to the left, Antonio Gates. God bless Antonio Gates. Undrafted Hall of Famer Sterling Sharp. Sterling Sharp got in there because of the whining by Shannon and a few others. I mean, yeah, Brett Favre made him. And that the one I disagree with is Sterling Sharp. He had no business in the Hall of Fame. Yeah, didn't even have a long career. Now, granted, yeah, poor guy. I feel for him on that, man. That cannot be good. The pain he suffers. Maybe it's some people view it as a just reward for Sterling Sharp, but I didn't agree with his selection. The rest, Gates, Allen, and Eric Allen, Jared Allen and Eric Allen, I think were more than deserving, especially Antonio Gates. Wasn't a question there. So anyway, the Pro Football Hall of Fame class has become a focal point for discussion, not just because of who was inducted, but also due to significant controversies surrounding those who were not. And let's start with the first one, Mr. Eli Manning. But first of all, real quick, before we get to Eli, premature manulication there. I cracked myself up. Oh, man. Okay, first of all, there were changes in the selection process. And obviously, that always brings debates over the merit and moral considerations for potential inductees. And this year's class brings to light the intricate dynamics of what it means to be enshrined in football history, in the greatest Hall of Fame of them all. Baseball is a second, and basketball is a distant third. And everybody else, well, I'm in the Hall of Fame for my industry, and who cares? But anyway, the selection process changes. They are reintroducing separate categories, or they reintroduce separate categories for coaches and contributors. These categories had previously been combined, but were separated again to ensure each group receives appropriate consideration. There were two new screening committees, and these committees were composed of Hall of Famers, former NFL personnel, football historians, and media members. And they're tasked with reducing the preliminary list of modern era and senior players. So obviously the modern era is responsible for reducing the preliminary list of the candidates we see, and the seniors for the veterans who deserve to be potentially go in but have missed their window. So this year the number of finalists was reduced from 15 to 10 with a final selection of no more than 5 and no fewer than 3 candidates from that group. So no more than 3 to 5 in the Hall of Fame, limiting the combined number of senior players, coaches, and contributors. This change ensures that the total number of inductees from these combined categories does not exceed 3 per year. That's odd. I kind of don't get that. Anyway, they put limitations is what it winds up to. So let's talk about, let's go back a step here. Eric Allen, known for his interception prowess. 54 interceptions and 8 pick sixes, earning him 6 Pro Bowl selections. Eric Allen, I want to say he played with the Saints. You know, Jared Allen, Vikings defensive end, 136 career sacks. He was a 4-time All-Pro and 5-time Pro Bowler, making a significant, significant impact on the defensive line. I remember the game. Joe's had to stop it. Jared Allen. Antonio Gates, one of the greatest tight ends, 955 receptions. God, I wish he had hit 1,000. And 11,841 receiving yards. Again, I wish he had hit 12,000. Securing 3 All-Pro selections and 8 Pro Bowl nods. Sterling Sharp, short career cut by injury. 3-time All-Pro, 595 receptions, 8,000 yards, and 65 touchdowns. And obviously he got in there because of Shannon Sharp. You know, he was dropping his knees to the reporters, to voters. There's no doubt about that. That was my industry. I know he was. So let's get to the real issue here. This has created more debate than actually talking about the players who got in. Eli Manning's Hall of Fame debate. He was omitted from the first ballot induction despite 2 Super Bowl wins against the GOAT, Tom Brady. So we're going to talk about career over merit. Career stats highlight, I hate to say it, people, mediocrity. 500 record, 117 is starting quarterback. Interceptions. He led the NFL interceptions 3 times, 2007, 2010, 2013. Go, Eli! Throwing 244 interceptions throughout his career, among the highest in NFL history. Passer rating of 84.1, below the league average during his era, ranking him 42nd among passers with at least 1,000 attempts since 2004. Lack of All-Pro recognition. Never earned an All-Pro selection. And that's an indicator of top-tier performance. So let's see, 0 MVP, 0 All-Pros, only 4 Pro Bowls in 16 years, a 500 career record. Never led the league in any stat but interceptions. His career passer rating is lower than Daniel Jones, that great former Giants quarterback. The kicker here is that the Giants fans, including our own Jimmy of the Blindside Blitz fame, God bless you, Jimmy, I love you to death, but and I was on his side. I originally was like, he belongs in there. Then I did my research. And I conclude that Giants fans, whoa, y'all thought he was getting in on the first ballot because of 2 Super Bowls? Originally, I would have been with you. But now after looking at that data, I'm like, whoa, I don't know if he'll get in, if he deserves to get in. But my take is simple. He beat the GOAT twice. I'm okay if he doesn't get in. If he gets in, I'm like, yeah, 2 Super Bowl wins. Doesn't get in, yeah, look at his stats. You know? And that one, he had help from the ref in the first NFL game, Super Bowl win. Yeah, so, Eli, I don't know what your future is, but it's not in the Hall of Fame for the short term, possibly long term. All right, let's get into a controversial one. Jim Tyrer.
Who?
Exactly. Jim Tyrer was drafted by the Dallas Texans. That's why you don't know who he is. In 1961, and played 13 seasons with the franchise that eventually became the Kansas City Chiefs, three-time Super Bowl champions. And he set a standard for left offensive tackles, one of the first great left tackles. He never got the money. The ones today do. But he was named AFL, Offensive Lineman of the Year in 1969. And was part of the Chiefs' Super Bowl victory. I want to say Super Bowl IV victory, where his blocking helped secure 151 yards against the Vikings. So he was all pro, all everything. He was a man. 9-time Pro Bowl selection and 6-time first-team all-pro, known for his size, quickness, and intelligence on the field. Look, so that's him right there. He started 180 consecutive games. Now think of that. In the 60s. 180 consecutive games. That's a record for the Chiefs left tackle at the time, showcasing not only durability, but his impact. I find his durability, that's the marvel here. Inducted in the Kansas City Chiefs Hall of Fame in 1977. Here's the downside. He was involved in the murder-suicide. It was a tragic event in 1980, and that's kind of why he's not in the Hall of Fame. This obviously raises ethical and moral questions about separating on-the-field performance from off-the-field actions. But these voters are only supposed to vote based off his on-the-field play. That's one of the rules. I don't know if it's unwritten or one of the rules, but that's what it's supposed to be. And one idiot over at Outkick, and I love Outkick to death, but screw you, you mother bleeper.
Integrity.
Yeah, and here's why I get angry. Look at this. Look at that helmet. Look at that helmet. And you tell me. Get it here a little bit bigger for you guys. Do you think that helmet was going to protect him much? This was before safety. That guy, CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy. Let me pronounce this right. Chronic traumatic encephalopathy.
Big word, man.
It didn't potentially influence Tyrer's later actions. To me, there's no if, ands, or buts. It did. 13 years playing in a league where there weren't any rules to protect anybody. Safety was not even second. It was third, fourth, fifth, sixth down the line in concerns by owners and league and everybody. Look at that helmet. There's no protection in that helmet. That helmet's pretty much a second skin. This was when they purposely hit you to take you out. They purposely would hurt you. I argue his condition should be considered in evaluating his legacy. And yes, I would put him in. Period. End of story. That Outkick fool. I have integrity. No, you want to sound pious or the girls. Yeah. I'm a good guy, ladies. You know, go screw yourself. You know, it's always the guys who never played or played at a high level or were scrubs who played. You know, it's like some of the games back there. You look at some of this film, you're like, yeah, the
players today are better than players back then.
Yeah, they are, because of technology, health, evolvement, they're bigger, stronger, faster. But I guarantee you, they would not have lasted as long. For him to last 13 years, he's looking at lasting 20 years here. Anyway, the debates over Eli Manning's Hall of Fame eligibility and Jim Tyrer's tragic post-football life have not only stirred public opinion, but have also spotlighted the complexities of Hall of Fame voting. You know what? There's no complexity here. These fools vote on feelings. I love Hub Arkosh to death, but feelings. I don't like Aaron Rodgers, so feelings in terms of MVP. I employed over 200 beat reporters over 10 years. I know what the hell I'm talking about with some of these people who vote. And you're supposed to vote strictly on athletic performance. And if you vote for it on the performance, well, then yes, there is an argument to be made before Eli Manning getting in with 2 Super Bowl wins over the GOAT. Those who acknowledge CTE today but refuse to look at its effects when safety wasn't considered and inferior equipment was used in the past are the biggest and worst hypocrites of them all. They show a faux, pious judgment and merely want to be seen as a good, honorable person. No, you're a hypocrite, judging people by today's standards back then. I mean, in terms of look at CTE. You know, what would have happened to Junior Seau had hurt somebody when he tried to kill himself running his SUV over a cliff? He survived. What would have happened? You know, he had CTE. Manning's case, though, might encourage a reevaluation of what constitutes Hall of Fame caliber in terms of statistics versus his moments of greatness, while Tyra serves as a reminder of the human element behind the jersey. There you have it. We're about at the hour mark, my friends. So I will postpone the hot read, and I will actually turn that into a clip. So be on the lookout for that. And I want to thank you for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed my take on the commercials, on hopefully what's coming to become the end of transgenderism in female sports, as well as my Hall of Fame takes. Do not forget, you can find this podcast and my others, Fired Up, as well as Fired Up California, my newest podcast, and my pop culture and culture podcast, The Red, White, and Rude, at grumblingsmedia.com, as well as YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, and Pandora, under the handle Grumblings Media. Thank you for tuning in. Do not forget to like and share this podcast. Hey, and in the comments, tell me where you disagree, what you agree with. Until next week, my friends, I am William Del Pilar for Points on the Board, and I bid you adieu.